countries, Kiev and Moscow, are set to resume peace talks, with President Zelensky saying the positions of both Ukraine and Russia at the negotiations are sounding more realistic. Iran's foreign minister rejects the U.S. claim that Moscow is blocking a deal at the Vienna talks, saying the White House needs to drop its own excessive demands. North Korea's latest missile launch ends in failure. Seoul says the projectile exploded in mid-air shortly after it was fired. Welcome to the program. The prime ministers of three NATO countries are in Kiev to support Ukraine amid its ongoing conflict with Russia. Leaders of the Czech Republic, Poland, and Slovenia arrived in the Ukrainian capital by train and met with President Volodymyr Zelensky. They will also meet other Ukrainian officials. The Polish premier says Ukraine has the unequivocal support of the EU. Warsaw favors an armed NATO peacekeeping mission to provide Ukraine with humanitarian aid. The risky trip marks the first visit by top foreign officials to Ukraine since Russia began its military operation there on the 24th of February. Kiev's mayor has also announced a 35-hour curfew amid heavy attacks on the capital.
Today is a difficult and dangerous moment. According to the decision of the military command, from today, March 15, from 8 p.m., a curfew is established in Kyiv. Movement through the city is prohibited without special passes. You can only go out to reach a shelter. The curfew will apply until 7 a.m. on March 17th. Therefore, I ask all Kyiv residents to prepare for the fact that they will have to be at home for 2 days, or in case of an alarm, in a shelter.
Ukrainian officials say at least 5 people were killed in Russian strikes on Kyiv. Authorities said a convoy of supplies for the port city of Mariupol was struck at a nearby town. Meanwhile, Fox News says a second journalist working for the network was killed in the incident, and unconfirmed reports suggest 19 people were killed in a Russian airstrike on a TV tower in Rivne, western Ukraine. The UN says 3 million people have so far fled Ukraine, over 1.8 million of them arriving in neighboring Poland. Well, Kyiv sounds optimistic about the ongoing talks aimed at resolving the conflict between Ukraine and Russia. Ukraine's president says the position of the two countries in the negotiations is now more realistic than before. Volodymyr Zelensky, however, believes more time is needed for the two sides to reach a peace deal. Earlier on Tuesday, an advisor to Zelensky said the negotiation process was very difficult and slow, but a compromise was within reach. He said with fundamental contradictions remaining between Kyiv and Moscow, the discussions will continue Wednesday. In recent days, officials from both sides have expressed hope for a peace agreement in the next few weeks. The EU and UK have approved a new batch of sanctions against Russia over its military offensive in Ukraine. The EU sanctions include bans on investments in the Russian energy sector, luxury goods, exports and imports of steel products. The new curbs also freeze assets of more Russian entrepreneurs. The British bans target hundreds of Russian entities and individuals, including those close to President Vladimir Putin. Europe, along with the U.S., has imposed several rounds of sanctions on Russia since Moscow began its military operation in Ukraine. The measures have led to soaring prices of energy and other commodities like wheat. Moscow accuses the West of Russophobia and has barred several top U.S. officials, including President Biden, from entering Russian soil. The Ukraine crisis has dragged on for 21 days now, and forecasts say the war is going to inflict severe economic hardship on people there.
We are presenting a number of scenarios, because if the conflict is a protracted one, if it were to continue, we are going to see poverty rates escalate very significantly.
According to the UN Development Program, 90% of Ukrainians could plunge into poverty if the war lingers over the next year. The organization is planning to provide cash transfers to Ukrainians so they can afford basic needs such as food. Otherwise, people will continue to flee Ukraine and the economy will probably collapse. The UNDP says an emergency cash transfer operation to Ukraine will cost $250 million per month. This would only partially cover the income losses of 2.6 million people who are expected to fall into poverty. Also, the International Monetary Fund has predicted that Ukraine's economy will experience a 10% contraction next year. Now, as thousands of Ukrainian refugees continue to cross the Polish border every day, our correspondent Robert Carter has visited one of the many checkpoints which have become clogged with Ukrainians trying to flee the conflict.
As the Ukraine exodus intensifies, Poland's major cities are starting to show signs of strain under the pressure, with local authorities warning that they simply can't cope with more arrivals.
This is just one of the many border crossings between Poland and Ukraine. Just behind me, a few meters, is Ukraine. Now, all day long, we've been witnessing coaches, vans, cars going backwards and forwards, supplies and aid going in, people and refugees coming out.
Whilst here, we managed to speak with Max, a Ukrainian from the Czech Republic. He's been waiting hours for his mother-in-law, who has fled from Kyiv. Speaking to Press TV, he informed us about his anger at the lack of help he sees on the ground from the rest of Europe.
I have no words how to describe overall situation. It's horrible. When people just crossing by in winter with kids, I have no words how to describe this situation. Frankly, There is support from Europe, but perhaps not quite enough.
Then suddenly, a call came through. Alex's mother-in-law had finally arrived.
I'm glad that we have finally succeeded.
Reunited again, finally. They now can head off to safety. But many more refugees aren't so lucky and remain stranded without key essentials. With reports of at least two Ukrainians crossing the Polish border every 3 seconds, how long can Poland maintain this huge humanitarian effort? Robert Carter, Press TV, Dorohusk.
Iran says a good, strong and stable deal can be finalized with support from all negotiating parties in the Vienna talks if the United States adopts a realistic approach. Hossein Amir Abdullahian, who was speaking to his Chinese counterpart over the phone, hailed Beijing's constructive role in the Vienna negotiations that are focused on removing Iran's sanctions. He also noted that boosting relations with China is a top priority for President Ebrahim Raisi's administration. Chinese Foreign Minister Wang Yi also reiterated Beijing's support for finalizing the Vienna talks. The conversation came a day after Amir Abdullahian paid a visit to Moscow, where he gained Russia's support for the revival of the Iran agreement.
Iran expects a good agreement to be reached in the near future in its talks on the revival of the Joint Comprehensive Plan of Action, known as the JCPOA. This was made by Iranian Foreign Minister Hossein Amir Abdullahian at a press conference following talks with Russian Foreign Minister Sergei Lavrov in Moscow. Amir Abdullahian said the delay in the negotiations could lead to the creation of good ground for resolving the remaining issues. He also said that Russia has not created any obstacles in the negotiations on the JCPOA revival and that the Vienna talks are in no way connected with the conflict in Ukraine.
Russia does not create any obstacles to reaching agreements. There is no connection between the developments in Ukraine and the Vienna talks. And until the end of the negotiations and the achievement of a good, powerful and lasting agreement, Russia will be close to Iran and will support Iran to achieve this agreement.
Meanwhile, Sergei Lavrov said his country has received written guarantees from the United States that Western sanctions on Russia over Ukraine will not affect cooperation with Iran within the framework of the JCPOA.
We received written guarantees. They are included in the text of the agreement itself on the resumption of the JCPOA on the Iranian nuclear program. These texts provide reliable protection for all the projects and areas of activity envisaged by the JCPOA, including the direct involvement of our companies, specialists, including their cooperation on such a flagship project of our cooperation as the Bushehr nuclear power plant, in the context of all existing plans in this regard.
Lavrov also rejected claims that Russia has created an obstacle to negotiations in the Austrian capital, backing the quick revival of the 2015 agreement.
There have been no exorbitant demands from our side, and there are none. All our rights within the framework of cooperation with Iran on the projects that the JCPOA provides for are reliably protected. I have heard how the Americans are trying to accuse us every day that we are slowing down this agreement. That's a lie. The agreement has not yet been finally approved in some capitals, and the Russian capital, Moscow, is not among them.
Amir Abdullahian and Lavrov also discussed other issues, including the Ukrainian conflict and regional issues such as developments in Afghanistan, Syria, and Yemen.
The foreign ministers, along with political and diplomatic issues, discussed economic affairs in order to neutralize the negative impacts and consequences of the U.S. and Western anti-Moscow sanctions through closer cooperation and rapprochement. Marina Kartunova, Moscow.
A senior member of Yemen's Supreme Political Council says Saudi Arabia cannot be a mediator in a Yemen war. Mohammed Ali Al-Houthi says Riyadh cannot be impartial as it is a perpetrator of war on Yemen. The top official was responding to a Reuters report of an initiative to hold talks between Yemeni factions in the Saudi capital, Riyadh, this month. The Saudi-based regional Arab bloc GCC is considering inviting the Ansarullah movement and other Yemeni parties for consultations in a UN-led peace effort. Saudi Arabia, along with some of its regional allies, launched a war on Yemen in 2015. Hundreds of thousands of Yemenis, majority of them civilians, have been killed and millions more displaced in the incessant Saudi bombing campaign and blockade on Yemen. The UK is hosting what campaigners call a shadowy arms fair to help weapons companies sell their deadly wares to stop people crossing borders and other equipment used for mass surveillance. Said Puraza has been to a protest, one of several to be held during the three-day arms fair.
A candlelight vigil in the heart of London to shed light on something that affects us all.
So many countries are too well armed with too much weaponry, and that only encourages them to start a dispute instead of talking and discussing and negotiating.
Organized by the Campaign Against the Arms Trade, Palestine Action, and the Joint Council for the Welfare of Immigrants, it's a call on the UK's Interior Ministry, the Home Office, to stop its secretive annual event known as Security and Policing, held only an hour's drive from the British Houses of Parliament.
These protesters tell us they have gathered here this evening to shed light on how the UK government is benefiting from the sales of arms, surveillance, and other such equipment to some of the world's most repressive regimes.
Up to 70 countries are invited, among them the UAE and Saudi Arabia. Their envoys rubbing shoulders with UK officials at the exhibition, now in its 40th year.
And they will use the equipment that will be sold at this fair to continue to oppress their people. And this is even more shocking after 81 people executed, executed in Saudi Arabia a couple of days ago. So this is a country that the UK regards as an ally.
The key focus of the fair this year, border control and surveillance. The products on sale designed to harass refugees and immigrants, many of them fleeing conflict.
Selling weapons to countries in conflict, to use weapons for oppression, displaces people, and then militarizing borders prevents people from fleeing. So it's a vicious cycle.
And there is no shortage of companies selling their tools of repression. One is the Israeli regime's NSO Group, the creator of the notorious Pegasus spyware. Another is the UK's BAE Systems, that's made some £20 billion in weapons sales to Saudi Arabia since the start of the kingdom's devastating war on Yemen in 2015. The arms fair will soon end, but not the arms trade. And the protesters here say neither will their campaign. until the UK bids farewell to the arms trade. Saeed Purizam, London.
South Korea says its northern neighbor has fired an unknown projectile that appeared to fail immediately after launch. Seoul says the suspected missile was fired from an airfield outside the North Korean capital of Pyongyang. That's after Japanese media reported a suspected ballistic missile launch by the North. Pyongyang has launched several missiles this year. South Korea and the U.S. say some of them were tests of a new intercontinental ballistic missile system. North Korea says those tests were for developing the components of a reconnaissance satellite. From Seoul, our correspondent Jennifer Chang has more to tell us about the North's missile plans.
The South Koreans have been saying that North Korea could be firing an ICBM as early as this week. So the entire country has been on the lookout for such a launch. And of course, the U.S. has agreed that this could also happen soon. And the whole world has been watching for this launch. There have been detections of activity at the Soheh satellite launch pad, where the North Koreans have been trying to develop a, reconnaissance satellite, and also at the Sunan airfield, where they shot off the last two ICBM components. Now, they say that these are ICBM components, but Pyongyang says this is a reconnaissance satellite, and many experts say that there is no proof that this is actually an ICBM.
Palestine groups advocating prisoners' rights say Israel detained nearly 450 Palestinians in February. The advocacy groups say the detainees include over 70 children and 10 women. Over a third of them were arrested in the city of Al-Quds, which has been a flashpoint over the planned eviction of several Palestinian families there. The groups say Israel currently holds 4,400 Palestinians in its jails, including 160 minors, and around 500 are held under the infamous administrative detention policy, which allows the regime to imprison Palestinians for years without charge or trial. The UN Human Rights Office has repeatedly urged Israel to end the much-criticized practice.
This is IRIB English Radio. With you early in the morning. With you at midday. With you till the night's end. IRIB English Radio.
In the limelight.
The Saudi judicial system is notoriously unfair, frequently wielding its authority to silence and punish political dissidents, says Jake Johnson, journalist, in an article published under the heading "Brutal Display of Impunity. Saudi Regime Executes 81 People in Single Day." Stay tuned for more. The government of Saudi Arabia has executed 81 people, including 7 Yemenis and a Syrian national, over the past 24 hours in what is believed to be the largest mass execution in the kingdom's history. Citing the country's interior ministry, the Wall Street Journal reported recently that most of those executed were Saudis. More than half were from the minority Shiite Muslim population, the journal added. The Interior Ministry didn't disclose how the men were killed. Executions in the past have involved beheading by sword in the kingdom, which remains among the world's top executioners despite recent efforts to curb the use of death penalty. In response to the mass killing, the human rights group Reprieve said in a statement that the world should know by now that when Saudi Crown Prince Mohammed bin Salman promises reform, bloodshed is bound to follow. Just last week, the Crown Prince told journalists he plans to modernize Saudi Arabia's criminal justice system, only to order the largest mass execution in the country's history, the group said, adding, there are prisoners of conscience on Saudi death row, and others arrested as children or charged with nonviolent crimes. We fear for every one of them following this brutal display of impunity. British Prime Minister Boris Johnson is due to visit Saudi Arabia soon to beg for Saudi oil to replace Russian gas, Reprieve continued. We cannot show our revulsion for Putin's by rewarding those of the Crown Prince. Johnson must speak up and condemn these killings. Those executed over the past 24 hours were accused of a variety of crimes, including pledging allegiance to foreign terrorist organizations. But the Saudi judicial system is notoriously unfair, frequently wielding its authority to silence and punish political dissidents. Rola Jibril, a foreign policy analyst and a visiting professor at the University of Miami, said Saudi Arabia's anti-terrorism law criminalizes any form of dissent. Peaceful activists, feminists and critics are branded terrorists. Evidence against them is extracted by torture. Despite the country's record, the United States in recent years, including during the Biden administration, has continued to supply the oil kingdom with weapons that is currently using to wage a deadly war against Yemen, creating the worst humanitarian crisis in the world. Recently, Axios reported that U.S. President Joe Biden is weighing a spring visit to Saudi Arabia to help repair relations and convince the kingdom to pump more oil amid fears of a supply shortage during the Russia invasion of Ukraine. The Biden administration has faced backlash over the past year for refusing to punish the Saudi regime for its role in the assassination of Jamal Khashoggi. U.S. Representative Ilhan Omar argued that it would be vitally immoral for the president to visit Saudi Arabia in pursuit of more oil production.
The spotlight. Joining us now from Ontario, Canada.
Now back to our story.
What is it in there?
We will be talking about this.
Let me bring in Leo Sazdi. He's a professor of international.
The Spotlight.
British Prime Minister Boris Johnson is about to travel to Saudi Arabia to reportedly lobby Crown Prince MBS to raise his country's oil output as Western energy sanctions on Russia begin to bite. He's already quizzed about a murder of journalist Jamal Khashoggi, whose killing U.S. intelligence agencies found was ordered by MBS. Johnson has compared President Putin to a drug dealer who has managed to hook Western nations on Russian oil and gas supplies ahead of his trip to Saudi Arabia. He's urging other European states to get themselves off that addiction. Welcome to The Spotlight. I'm your host, Behrouz Najafi, and these are our guests in this episode of The Spotlight. Director of the IGA, Ali Al-Ahmed, is joining us out of Washington, D.C. Also with us will be the head of the Islamic Human Rights Commission, Masoud Chajere, in London. Welcome to the show, gentlemen. Now, let me go to Ali. British Prime Minister Johnson is to visit Saudi Arabia, as you know, to demand more crude supplies. And, you know, Saudi Arabia has been waging this devastating war on Yemen for 7 years. It's turning to be 8 years soon. So why do you think Boris Johnson never goes to that kingdom to push them to stop the ruinous war on Yemen?
The UK and Boris Johnson and his many of his cabinet ministers present and the former British leaders are involved in the war. They benefit financially from this war. The United Kingdom actively supports the Saudi invasion of Yemen over the 7 years since it started in 2015 and before even. The British provide logistic, military, and direct assistance to the bombing and siege that the Saudi and the Emiratis are waging against Yemen. So you can see the contrast between what the same person is doing vis-a-vis the Russian interference in the Ukrainian civil war versus the Saudi invasion of Yemen. So that is the policy of the United Kingdom and its government for a long time, to encourage wars between Arabs and Muslims and to feed off these wars. And that is a principle in the doctrine of the ruling class in the United Kingdom.
Uh-huh. Okay, let me turn to London. Masoud, you know that Johnson will be landing in Saudi Arabia later today to meet with the Crown Prince and de facto ruler there, MBS. And this is only 3 days after, you know, Saudi Arabia executed 81 people in one single day. And most of those people, who were they? They were political dissidents and pro-democracy protesters. So what message would this trip send to the Saudi rulers?
Well, it really is a very devastating message. I mean, the message is very clearly saying that you could continue your tyranny, you could continue killing your own people, you could continue killing people like Khashoggi, and you could sort of unleash war crimes against the Yemenis day in, day out, targeting innocent people. But the business is as usual. We wrote a letter to Boris Johnson today highlighting exactly all these points. The fact that, there's no doubt and the way that the kingdom in Saudi Arabia, this regime, is undermining every aspect of human rights and promoting tyranny, even in the royal family. I mean, he doesn't even stop on his own family. We know what they did. And I think, what is really important is not just for the money. I mean, the reality is that when you look at the sort of the exports from Britain to Saudi Arabia, including all the weapons that he's been giving to him to kill innocent people in Yemen. When you look at that, that's not even 1% of GDP. So really, we are talking about peanuts in comparison to the economy of Britain. This has been done not because it's benefiting ordinary people in Britain. This is benefiting the sort of elite in Britain. Arm industry doesn't really bring a lot of employment or benefit to masses. It only fills the pocket of those rich individuals, those 1% of the society. Mm-hmm. And unfortunately, you know, this is happening for their benefit, although prime ministers and politicians in Britain claim that they are selling these arms, you know, to bring benefit to masses. But arms sales doesn't bring a benefit to masses, mm-hmm. and it actually creates this sort of environment that, you know, tyrants like the prince are actually going to go much further because there is no one stopping them and there is no consequences for the murders of 81 people or murders of hundreds of thousands of people in Yemen, and indeed creating sort of havoc inside Saudi Arabia. Let us not forget, there are 30,000 political prisoners in Saudi Arabia, and mm-hmm. that is an astonishing number in comparison to the number of citizens in that country.
Okay. Master Joseph, if we have time, I'll come back and ask you about the highlights of your letter to Johnson. Okay, now let me ask Ali, what do you think that MBS will ask for in exchange for pumping more oil into the market?
American agreement with MBS is that they will bring him back to the international fold and to whitewash him and rehabilitate his image. And that part of it was Macron went and met with him, and now Johnson is meeting with him. And then the next will be the Americans directly, either the foreign minister, the secretary of state, and then Biden himself, or Vice President Kamala Harris, then Biden. So I think he still wants to be brought back, received, and of course he wants to have assurances that he will be the king, and with support, and the criticism in certain quarters will end. He does not even like it when a newspaper criticizes him. So you will see in the next few months the British government leaning on the BBC, on British media to stop criticism of MBS. And the same thing has been requested from the Americans. Even an article in the Washington Post will make MBS upset, and he will want to pressure the Americans. So the MBS wants to give more oil, pump more oil, but he wants a price, and that price is giving him weapons, more weapons, so he can, you know, in his mind, combat Iran's power in the region.
And let him take out dissidents. Okay, Masoud Shajarev, we have Reprieve, a human rights advocacy group, accusing the British Prime Minister of, quote, trading oil for blood. Is Boris Johnson trading oil for blood, in your opinion?
Absolutely. I think it goes without saying. Johnson knows very well that appeasing a tyrant and sort of someone who's psychotic, like the prince, it really is very dangerous. This guy is unstoppable. He has got no sort of standard of limitation. And to appease him is basically unleashing him, not just against his own citizens and even his own family, but against the whole region. And, you know, let us remember what happened to Shah of Iran. Shah of Iran was, you know, similar personality to some extent, and he wanted to be supported to be the stooge of United States and the West in the region against the interests of his own citizens and his own people and his own region. And you saw what happened. And really, indeed, the same thing will happen. And people both in Saudi Arabia and the region are not going to tolerate a psychopath who actually kills people like that and destroys the lives of people in Yemen, and indeed, even as I said, goes for his own family. I think we need to sort of understand that this is very dangerous to go and appease people like that. There will be no future. Nothing good will come out of it.
Now, Ali, what about the Khashoggi assassination case for which Riyadh is responsible? What makes the UK close its eyes on such blatant crime and opt for a closer relationship with the perpetrators?
The UK has never really cared about the Khashoggi case or another. I disagree with your oil. It's just part of the genetic ideology in the UK and in the ruling class there, that they do not view their Muslims with, they don't see value their life. Even if it doesn't harm or their interests, they are not willing to do anything to stop murders or crimes. This has been the history of the British Empire and the British government. Those crimes, many of them, especially in Yemen, were not carried out. The Saudis were not able to carry them out without support and direct support and help from foreign government, including the UK government. So they are partners in this crime. That's why they are not going to even these crimes, because they are supporting them, even if they didn't state this support openly. They are indeed partners to these crimes.
Mm-hmm. Now, Mr. Shajar, we've talked enough of the UK. Let's now turn to the U.S. and discuss that a little bit. President Biden had promised, if you remember, a hard line in Saudi Arabia. He pledged that the U.S. would finally teach dictators a lesson by punishing Saudi Arabia. Biden said at a 2019 Democrat debate, and I'm quoting him, that we are going to, in fact, make them pay the price and make them, in fact, the pariah that they are. These are the words of President Biden. So why did he fail to deliver on these promises and claims?
Unfortunately, the what it rules is pounds and dollars. And the fact of the matter is that the value of the lives of people in Yemen or in Saudi Arabia or the region has got, there's no value to it. So although they, from time to time, we hear this sort of sentiment that they want to be bringing some sort of ethical sort of dimension to their policy, but that is really just empty words. It's empty words in the United States, empty words in United Kingdom. I mean, United Kingdom, the courts actually ordered the government to stop sending arms, but they still do it. Same thing in United States. They are breaking their own principles, their own ethics, and their own laws to just continue doing this. And this is why I'm saying that, there will be a price to pay for this, in the same way that there was a price, they had to pay a price vis-a-vis Shah of Iran. And when that happens, after that, people will not have short memory. They will realize that people like Saudi rulers, they have ruled and they have killed with the support of the United States and the support of the West, and they couldn't have caused this sort of mayhem and destruction without their support.
Right. Ali, we have also the U.S. State Department citing, let me cite what the U.S. State Department has said, significant rights issues, including unlawful killings. This is all about Saudi Arabia, based on that report. Executions of nonviolent offenses, forced disappearances, torture, and inhumane treatment of prisoners, all this by Saudi Arabia. And the list goes on and on. This is just a little part of this. So despite all this, we still have the U.S. treating Riyadh as a special and very close ally. Your thoughts on that?
Yeah. Yesterday, the spokesman for the State Department refused to even comment on the executions that happened on Saturday. And in addition, The American government continues to train Saudi military in the United States, in Nevada, and in Saudi Arabia, also in King Abdulaziz Air Base, which is, you know, near where most of the victims of the executions live. Mm-hmm. The person, the American official in charge of promoting human rights and democracy, yesterday praised one of the Saudi human rights criminals, Mohammed Al Issa, who established the terrorism court that has sentenced hundreds of people to death, mostly protesters and activists. He is responsible for killing, torture, and abuse of women rights and other violations. Yesterday, the Mrs. Zia, she is the top American official for promotion of democracy and human rights, praised him with a picture in her account. You know, today she is testifying before the Senate on how to counter autocracy or authoritarianism in the world. This is the American policy. To them, their friends are, no matter how horrible they do, no matter how horrific crimes they commit, they don't even bother to issue a statement, because again, this is really, it's cultural, it's the racist, that the value of 81 lives in their mind does not reach to the level of issuing a statement that does not do anything. It's just a statement. So even an empty statement from the State Department did not come out, and the spokesperson refused to say anything about them. And that is the real policy of the United States. Human rights was used as a weapon. They don't believe in human rights outside their borders. America has a lot of issues with human rights, but they do have some standards in this country. So, but they do not care about human rights when it comes to Arab and Muslim countries. Even if they stated, even if they condemned countries like Iran and Iraq and Syria and others, it is all used or is coming out of political expediency, not because they truly believe in the rights of Arabs and Muslims. And this is something the U.S. has to deal with, just like it had to deal one day with slavery, and continues to deal with racism in this country. This is an issue that must be in the center and must be brought to the attention of the American elites, both in the political and intellectual side.
Okay. Now, Masoud, the West, spearheaded by the U.S., you know, has always boasted of observing human rights. They've kept criticizing others for not doing so. How come when it comes to their interests, they totally forget about such claims?
Human rights and articulation of the human right is just a tool. It's just a tool to sort of achieve goals, political goals. It's very clear now. I mean, you know, we have on one side the sort of Ukraine crisis, and you know, everyone is sort of attacking Russia and sort of highlighting how many tons of bombs have been dropped in the last few weeks. And then in the same time, we've got the same amount of bombs being dropped on Gaza just in a matter of one day. And, you know, the double standard, the hypocrisy of it, it actually highlights that human rights is just a tool to be spent and to be used for a political purpose. And indeed, we have to understand the fact that these 81 poor souls had to perish and have to be executed right now in this particular time is because that the prince calculated that this is a good time to do it, because the West is under pressure for oil and everything else, and they are going to let me get away with it, get away with murder of innocent people. And this is a calculation that he's doing, and the calculation that the West is doing, that this is the price to pay. So human rights, it really is just an excuse. And it really is not at play at all.
Okay, Ali, we have 1 minute for you for your final comments.
Yeah, look, what happened here, it was ordered by MBS himself. No such executions could happen in the country without an order from the top, and that person who ordered it personally is Mohammed bin Salman, the Saudi Crown Prince. So this crime falls, he is the number one person responsible for it, and people who followed or carried on that crime also are responsible. This is an opportunity for the American and the Europeans to show us if they are honest about their claim that they support human rights. Let's see sanctions on these individuals. Let them make them the pariah that they are, as Biden once said. And he said it only just to get elected, and then after that, he changed his position to the people in our world. The brown-skinned people is like, this is the reality of Western policy. They use human rights when it suits them, when it's good for them. But they defend the worst human right criminals you can imagine. Let us remember Churchill is one of the most, is a war criminal, massacre, who carried massacres across the world, and yet you never hear that. So about in the West about these crimes, he's hailed as an example of democracy.
Right.
This is the same policy. The judges and proxies are called reformers while they are killing and starving millions of people.
Okay, thank you so much. That's all the time we have. Director of the IGA, Ali Al-Ahmed, joined us from Washington, D.C., and head of the Islamic Human Rights Commission, Masroor Chajri, from London. And I've been your host, Behrouz Najafi, and I'll see you next time.
We are with you. What about you? IRIB English Radio.
تمام ارزش‌ها و صفاتی که انسان احترام می‌گذاره، همه این ارزش‌ها در علی بن ابی طالب جمعه.
Human in general, whether a Muslim, non-Muslim, or even a disbeliever, respect the values present in the character of Ali ibn Abi Talib.
لا يقيم أمر الله سبحانه إلا من لا يصانع ولا يضارع ولا يتبع المطامع.
Imam Ali عليه الصلاة والسلام, the reason we love him as our hero, or not only in the material sense, in the spiritual sense, in the leadership sense.
The universal persona of Imam Ali alayhi salam in To My Brother. Imam Ali alayhi salam, the most distinguished and extraordinary personality in Islam after the Holy Prophet Muhammad. His entire life is a struggle for the advancement of Islam, the universal religion prescribed by Allah for all of humanity. Imam Ali alayhi salam was the living miracle raised up by the Holy Prophet Muhammad himself, and was not only the successor and the executor of the Holy Prophet Muhammad, but as history testifies, he was also a great human being, a brave defender of Islam, a just and fair judge, a generous philanthropist, a champion of the people, and the most pious person of his time. And in today's world, overcome by evil and darkness, and oppression and slavery, and tyranny and falsehood, a quick look into this beacon of truth and justice, a look into the universal persona of Imam Ali, is greatly useful for making and changing our lives, our families, our societies, and our world into the beautiful world that Allah has planned for humanity.
قال أمير المؤمنين علي عليه السلام: إذا كان في رجل خلة رائقة فانتظروا أخواتها.
أمير المؤمنين إمام علي عليه السلام stated: If a man possesses a revealing quality, wait and see his other qualities.
Welcome back, dear friends. It's great to have you with us. This is IRIB English Radio, the programs to my brother, and we were discussing the universal persona of Imam Ali ibn Abi Talib alayhi salam. Dear friends, in the beautiful discussions and the beautiful statements of Imam Ali alayhi salam, we find that Imam Ali truly did have a universal persona. And we see that his persona and his life and his morals and his ethics and his lifestyle, his seerah, his sunnah, his ways and his manners are truly universal, because even after the passage of time, and that too over 1,000 years, we are still able to benefit from Imam Ali alayhi salam. One of the things that we learn, and of course a lesson that is taught to us by His Eminence, the first divinely appointed Imam, is about forbearance and knowledge. It is interesting, Imam Ali alayhi salam gives certain relationships to these two things, that is, forbearance and knowledge. His Eminence says, forbearance is a believer's supporter, and knowledge is a believer's friend. Truly, dear brothers and sisters, forbearance is a great support. If we look at ourselves and if we look at our life and the people around us, we will find that forbearance, steadfastness, tolerance, patience, these things are all a great support for every single one of us. To have a forbearance means that in the difficult times of life, one does not falter. And likewise, to have forbearance means in the good times of our life, we also don't falter. So in the bad times, of course, we might go astray, we might commit sin, we might become hopeless and despair. In these instances, we must have forbearance, and that forbearance, that patience to continue to not fall into these pits of deception and hopelessness. This forbearance is a great support. And likewise, when things are going our way and things are good and happy and everything seems to be going well, forbearance means to not go astray, to not commit sin, to not become arrogant, to not become proud. And so in both conditions, we find that forbearance, patience, tolerance, steadfastness, determination, these are a believer's support. And for our brothers and sisters who are looking for friends, Imam Ali says that knowledge is a believer's friend. Knowledge about life, knowledge about death, knowledge about the hereafter, knowledge about the religion, knowledge about the purpose of life, this is your best friend, because it is this kind of knowledge which leads to action and leads to wisdom, and it is this knowledge which will help one to be able to be successful in both this world and the next. And so profound lessons Forbearance is a believer's supporter, and knowledge is a believer's friend, brought to us by the universal persona of Imam Ali alayhi salam.
تبقى عيني بدمع مشتاقيا قد لسعت حية الهوى كبدي فلا تبيب لها ولا راغي
تمام ارزش‌ها و صفاتی که انسان چه به عنوان انسان مؤمن به اسلام چه به عنوان انسان مؤمن به هر دینی
human in general whether a muslim non-muslim or even a disbeliever respect the values present in the character of Ali ibn Abi Talib. This means Ali ibn Abi Talib is a global character who is respected by Sunnis, Shias, and even non-Muslims. Everyone, even the faithless people, respect Imam Ali and his personal values.
In the name of Allah, Assalamu alaikum, dear brothers and sisters. Welcome to this segment of To My Brother. My name is Muhammad. After returning from the Battle of Siffin, Imam Ali gave certain pieces of advice to one of his sons. Historians consider him to be Imam Hassan alayhi salam, while others are of the opinion that he was Muhammadul Hanafiya. He wrote this letter in the form of a will. They deal with almost every aspect of life, which goes a long way to make a man successful in life, brave, humane, generous, virtuous, and pious. Today, I'm going to read to you an excerpt from the last will of Imam Ali alayhi salam. Please stay with us. My dear son, remember, the best out of these pieces of advice of mine are those which tell you to fear Allah, to concentrate and to confine yourself to the performance of those duties which have been made incumbent upon you by Him, and to follow in the footsteps of your ancestors, the Holy Prophet and Imam Ali, and your pious and virtuous relationship. Verily, they always carefully measured their thoughts and deeds, as you must also try to do, and they carefully thought over the subject before saying anything about it or before doing a deed. You should also follow the same. This kind of deliberation made them take from life what was really the best and forsake that which was not made incumbent upon them or which was not the best. If your mind refuses to accept my advice and you persist to try your own experiments like them, then you are at liberty to arrive at your conclusions but only after thoroughly studying the subject and after acquiring the knowledge necessary for such decisions.
Now we invite you to listen to Sayyid Muhammad Ridhvi.
Aliyun minni wa ana min